accession number 27093, Real 3.
Helga Wolf, and this is Real 3. Yes, you're going to tell me about coming to England. This would be, you say, in May 1939.
End of May 1939, after I had been to the prefecture, where they told me that this was the last time that there was an extension, I would be sent back to Germany. My family in Paris must have set things into motion, again unbeknown to myself, except for the fact that shortly after this interview at the prefecture, we had people from the country ringing us that they had orphanages for children like myself, Jewish children like myself. They were very glad to welcome me, such as the ones near Lyon, where the butcher of Lyon liquidated the children, Barbie, which to my mind was very surprising, and we were wondering who was in connivance with who. Anyhow, what happened was, one day we got a letter, please have your the child ready by next morning, or the same evening, I don't know exactly which, to be at the Gare du Nord to take the train to London, and my little suitcase was packed, and I must say, beautiful dresses, including a brocade pink evening dress, which I used in Paris, and which I sold as a student, and I remember getting £2 for it. So it must have been quite something in those days. £2 was a lot of money. So all that was packed. I was taken to the Gare du Nord. And there, I must say, it was really very, very sad. You had all these children, again, Czech, Polish, Austrian. The youngest must have been around 3. I was one of the eldest. We were put into compartments after the various adieus, tearful adieus and crying. And I was put in charge of 2 or 3 little ones. The youth leader who accompanied us had chocolates, stuffed the children's mouths with chocolates and sweets. They stopped crying. We all fell asleep, and when I woke up, I saw Victoria Station. And I literally don't know how they got us into the boat, across the channel, out of the boat, into the train. I just have no recollection. I must have been half asleep. And then we stood there, and a lady from one of the synagogue committees came. I think it was Seymour Street Synagogue in the West End. And I was being picked because I had a beautiful hat and a lovely coat, black coat, with velvet trimmings. And although it must have been very hot, but they probably thought that matching hat couldn't be packed. Anyhow, they put that on me, and somebody must have taken it off, and then they put that on me. And a very well-dressed lady in all her fineries took me, not to the hostel, where I should have gone. There was scarlet fever there, but to a student's hostel at the corner of Randolph Avenue in Maida Vale. And I was there for 6 weeks and had the most glorious time. And this is when I really, straight away at once, I could say, fell in love with this country, because the girls, they were students at Bedford College. The matron couldn't speak a word of German. I couldn't speak a word of English. I was there the whole day with her. We got on like a house on fire. And in the evenings, the girls were there. Weekends, they took me out to Hampshire, to wherever. And it was absolutely great. Obviously, I went into the college. I thought, right, that's something for me later on, not straight away. I'll get there. And then, of course, when the 6 weeks were over, it was the good time was over as well, because this was diabolical. I know I shouldn't say that, because I was saved, I was sound, I was clean, I had a bed, but it was all right for kids who had no ambition. There was no teaching, no training. One of the committee ladies came once a week with a bit of needlework, doing some cross stitches or whatever, useless. It was a beautiful house. I can't say any different. It was really a wonderful house with a garden in the middle, the whole estate around the garden. Really lovely building. And I shouldn't have grumbled. But there was nothing to do.
Was this with a private family then?
No, it was a hostel.
It was still the hostel.
It was a hostel. The hostel, the Bedford College residence was a big corner house. Then there was Randolph Avenue, and it was the third or fourth house down.
So you were still in the same place?
In the same place.
Sorry, I misunderstood. Yes. I thought you had gone on somewhere else.
No. It was the hostel. The girls, more or less my age, perhaps a year younger, and all they did was, there was a record player, danced day and night to some stupid music. The matron, under matron, made us clean the house, I don't know how often, in order to keep us busy. We were allowed to go out. And I remember my cousin, Renate, from Berlin, was there as well. And we used to walk from Maida Vale to Hyde Park. We had sixpence pocket money, and I've just written a story about, which I call The Allies, because he is the first Allied soldier I met, a Frenchman, who was pleased to hear me speak French. I was giving French lessons to my cousin and our other friend, and very nice gentleman, young man. And so the other two were laughing tittered while we were conversing. I was interested in Paris, etc., etc. And after he left and had excused himself very politely, I said, "What on earth were you doing, you two idiots?" Well, he was sitting on the plum stones, because we'd eaten plums and they thought that was hilarious. Anyhow, you know, this is more or less how we spent our time.
Did the group you came over with, would this have been part of the Kindertransport?
No, it was not. It was different from the Kindertransport because we didn't come directly from Austria or Germany. We came via Paris, and it was arranged by the Committee Israelite, and I don't know who else was responsible on the other side. Israelite, de France.
Yes, I'm with you. The French, yes.
The French, who may have been in direct contact, as far as I'm concerned, with the Seymour Street Synagogue. But I couldn't be sure. I really wouldn't know.
And so you were able to stay permanently, were you, in Britain? Was that the arrangement, that you were regarded as a refugee?
I should think so, because what happened shortly after the outbreak of war, there was the aliens classification, and I knew more about it later when I worked for Eleanor Rathbone than I did at the time. We were taken, or I was taken, by the matron. Oh no, I'd been evacuated then already. That was at the beginning of the war, after we'd been evacuated. I was taken to Watford Police Station to be categorized under the Enemy Aliens Act, or the Aliens Act, it was called. And one thing I remember clearly, there was this good man there, the magistrate, who didn't know what had landed upon his poor shoulders. And he saw me, you know, not knowing what was going on, because my English was practically non-existent. And of course, straight away, you know, category C, no problem. And I dare say that's what it was. But yet, there was an older girl in the hostel who came much later. She was interned. So, but this was all on the fringe of my existence. I was so upset that nothing was done for us as far as education was concerned, that my cousin had left. Her mother took her out because she saw that, A, there was nothing there for her daughter, and she had been, again, a very snotty-nosed madam was my aunt, and of course the only permit was to be a maid. But the people were nice enough to have her daughter somewhere near Birmingham, but it was in the country, so she went there. So I lost my friend Renate. But the other Renate and I, we decided to get a job for ourselves. I got a job in John Lewis, and she got a job, I forget, was it Evans? Anyhow, in Oxford Street. And literally with the first two or three wages, we moved out, to the horror of the establishment there, what would become of us. And what we didn't was the blackout. I mean, this is quite indelible, sort of, really sort of etched in my mind. There was a car coming in the blackout. We were there in Randolph Avenue with our two cases. We'd seen the room on a notice board. And he saw us there, standing there. It was only Sutherland Avenue, more or less round the corner, trying to heave those cases. Anyhow, he let us into the car. Unbelievable. And sort of halfway there, we suddenly realized Oh, we're terrified, but the man stopped at the right place, helped us up a few steps too. And we moved into a house owned by a French lady, and she was absolutely thrilled to bits because she could speak French with me. We got one room. And only gradually we realized that there was a lot of traffic night time, but we were so tired anyhow because most of the time we had to walk to John Lewis at the other, so it didn't worry us. So that was another bit of sex education. And the very first bit of sex education I had got in Paris, when in my French studies and my search of French culture, knowledge and otherwise, I sort of neared one of the ladies of the night during the day with a wonderful fur coat in summer, which he opened slightly ever so often as gentlemen passed by. And I overheard transactions going, and once I sort of must have been a little bit close bystander, anyhow was shooed away, and later on it dawned on me that I was sort of what I'd been witnessing. So I, with sort of the various pieces, piecing things together in Paris and what they call a knocking shop where we lived, my sex education was practically completed.
Is that where you were living?
In Sutherland, with a French lady. Well, not exactly a knocking shop, but I mean, obviously, she must have had a couple of rooms, or three rooms, or four rooms, I don't know, where ladies, prostitutes, brought the gentlemen. But I mean, as far as we were concerned, it didn't interfere with us in any way. We were out during the day, and we were too tired at night, and she was very nice and generous. She let us have another room upstairs, where we had, I'd assembled a lot of books by then.
Had you heard from your family? You know, I was wondering, you'd left in 38. What sort of contacts you had?
Well, I had one last letter, which I've still got. And I know a lot of people, the archives in Frankfurt wanted it, the state archives. I could donate it to the Imperial War Museum, but I'm not. I even don't want it photocopied because it's too personal. The very last letter, and I want to hand it down to our daughter because they're her grandparents. And
have you been hearing regularly from them since you left Germany?
No, that was the very last letter.
Yes, but had you heard from 38? Had they been writing to me in France?
Yes.
What sort of letters were you getting?
Well, just general news, nothing which would indicate what they were going through.
But the last letter was different, was it?
No. Just what the one thing, my father gave me the dates of his father and his grandfather, obviously realizing I might need it. Or of the my maternal family, my paternal family. And of course, also before I left, I forgot to say that, and that certainly was another thing. My father, in order to add to the non-existent family income, I'm going back now to before I left, he was working nighttime for the German booksellers who had bought books confiscated from the Jews. And as my father was well known, he was cataloguing them. And one day he was caught and he came home with his face literally blood streaming all over his face. That's sort of one of the last pictures I have of my father. Now, we lived in this boarding house in Sutherland Avenue, and then Renate, who had a very checkered career, she's a story, my story as well, she decided to join the Land Army, and so I was left on my own. And I'd gone to extramural classes while I was still in John Lewis. And that's where I met the secretary of a friend of Eleanor Rathbone's. She was the principal of, on my head, I can't remember anymore, it's in Miss Hubbard. Hubbard, was it Hubbard? Principal of one college, and they were very great friends. And anyhow, through her, I heard that Eleanor Rathbone was looking for somebody who could speak German, hopefully also knew shorthand. Well, I'd gone to Pittman's, as well as the extramural classes, rural classes, in the evenings. But I wasn't very great at shorthand. My English wasn't all that brilliant, but good enough to get certificates of merit for, what was it, social, two courses I did there. One was about something about education. I mean, I always knew I wanted to become a teacher. And I forget what the other one was, and I learned an awful lot, English and meeting people, and of course the people in John Lewis, I must say they were fantastic. These simple people in the receipt department, we had to type receipts, which were then on pink little slips, they were stuck on the statements. They were terrific. I mean, they literally mothered me, and, you know, I mean, it was, again, absolutely great.
You were doing more clerical work then?
Yes, the simplest kind of clerical work. I mean, anybody could have banged a typewriter, just the name, the sum. I think that was about all. And then we had to take it all to the front, Miss Gill and her friend, and they looked through it, and it was fine. Anyhow, I went to these classes, and there was this secretary of Miss Hubbard, and we got befriended. She's considerably older than I was, a good 12 years older. And she said, well, you could always see. And I used to cycle to all those places. I had an ancient bicycle, used to cycle to those places then. And I made an appointment. And I don't know if you know the lady, Vera Craig. Does that mean anything to you? She was... Eleanor Rathbone was the honorary secretary of the Parliamentary Committee on Refugees, and her secretary was Vera Craig. And that day, the weather was so grim, and it was cold, and I was wondering, I thought I couldn't cycle there, possibly. It was near Tufton Court. What do? Put sixpence in the gas meter, which also had a gas ring, and I cooked for myself on the gas ring. I mean, I earned, I forget now. It was a pittance. It's in my book somewhere what I earned. Or shall I pay the fare? And then I thought, well, I might just as well go. And when Vera Craig saw me, she obviously straight away took to me straight away. She gave me a letter to do, which was full of mistakes, which she threw straight in the basket. And while I had typed it, she was on the telephone to Eleanor Rathbone, and she must have said to her, well, there's a poor thing. I think we better employ her, otherwise she'll probably finish up dead, literally. I mean, I was undernourished. I was a skeleton, but reasonably bright. And she said to me, I'm sure I can teach you. Anyhow, I earned 25 shillings first. Then they raised it to 30 shillings. And straight away, I got £3 to get me something to eat as the first piece of weekly wage. And I worked there, and obviously, gradually, I went over to Tufton Court, first sort of to as a messenger. Then I was called upon to take handkerchiefs, folders, all sorts of things which Eleanor Rathbone had forgotten to take to the house. I remember seeing Winston Churchill in his famous siren suit, and, you know, sort of various other people came up to us in the office, the other MPs who were interested. And I learned an awful lot by typing a bit better, my shorthand, well, not very much.
What did you learn about that committee, the work that she was doing? What were they actually doing?
Well, what they were doing was they took up the cases of internees who were in the Isle of Man or had been sent to Canada or Australia and submitted applications to the Home Office for their release. And our job was to find as much material which would prove their bona fide cases, that their cases were bona fide, and some interviewers only spoke German, so that's where I came in. Some interviews I was sent out because what was being said wasn't right for a teenager's ears. There was one who was released earlier, a titled German aristocrat who had slept with a Jewish internee's wife, which also I learned later. And it was very colourful in many ways. There were one or two where, via Eleanor, it was found out that it was a Nazi informer in the camp. And funnily enough, we saw his wife, who pleaded for her husband, and later on, she had opened a dancing school in Hampstead. And our daughter went to that. And she vaguely recognized her. Well, I did recognize her. Obviously, I didn't say anything. You know, where's your husband? Is he back in Germany? Or what's he doing? But I could see that she was looking at me. I mean, it wasn't lost on her where our first encounter had taken place. So, it was highly interesting. And as time went on, I went to the Polytechnic in Regent Street because I knew my education was had too many gaps. I learned Latin, which I knew I'd need for my languages. I could take a course in logic, which would replace arithmetic then, math.
End of reel three.